On the phone with me is Laura Cahew, and she is with the South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center. Hi, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
Well, very good. Thank you very much. And welcome to Cows Radio here in California.
Great. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
And, well, you're in South Carolina. Now, obviously, we're on the left coast here. Things are done differently there, are they? Do you know much about California and what happens here?
We keep up with California quite a bit because most of the immigrant community here in South Carolina tends to watch national TV, and a lot of the coverage on trending and issues that are happening on immigration reform tend to come out of California. So they're more in tune with what's going on in California than South Carolina.
We're going to be talking really about human trafficking, a very difficult subject that you've been involved with there. Can you explain, a brief explanation, what human trafficking is, and we'll go from there?
There seems to be a little bit of confusion in finding the correct definition of what human trafficking is and differentiating it from human smuggling or the movement or transporting of humans. And one easy way to differentiate the both of them is that human trafficking really involves exploitation, whereas the smuggling of human beings involves, it's just a transportation of it. So it's exploitation versus transportation.
Just a one-time thing, basically, send someone over the border and that's it. But
right, and for human smugglers, it's the individuals that are being smuggled will pay the smugglers to provide that service for them. So they are willing participants, in a sense, and that is the end of it once you get across to wherever you're going. But in human trafficking, it's exploitation. The person that is being trafficked might enter into the agreement, perhaps coerced or under a set of lies. And once they are under the control of the trafficker, they may be losing any form of identification they may have, which renders them very vulnerable before any authority. They have no control or say about their moving, their movements. They can't come and go as they please. And if they do have any kind of movement, they're always under surveillance and indirect control of the person that is trafficking them.
Well, call it slavery. Is that one word for it?
Yes, that is the modern conceptualization of human trafficking is people call it the modern slavery. And I think it's slavery, and it just looks a little bit different from the slavery that we know from history, simply because of the age in which we live in. So transportation has changed, the technology has changed, communication systems are different, so that looks different. But the underlying concepts of the denial of freedom or the exploitation, and oftentimes with torturing devices and cruelty and violence are all the same undertone of a slavery system, regardless of which period in history we look at.
Right, exactly. And this is happening all over America. This is not isolated in any one particular area, is it?
Correct. And it seems to have exploded over the last couple of decades. It is on the rise. And I think that partly has to do with the globalization of the economies around the world and the pressure that has placed on many populations to move or have been displaced by economic trends. So that process, the need and large movements of people around the world then tends to serve as a cloak, if you will, or cover for this other type of activity so that it's less noticeable when many people that look very different, that speak different languages, that might have different cultural practices suddenly appear in different parts of the world. Nobody seems to really notice because they're part of the migration experience that is happening around the world.
Are there any particular places in the world where people are being, where they're being used like that more than others in terms of particular populations or anything?
I know that it is a serious problem in Europe. The European Union has a particular problem with human trafficking. In the American continent, the United States has a very, very large problem with human trafficking, and trafficking victims tend to come primarily from Mexico right now, the largest numbers, because of the proximity, the geographic proximity of the country, and the other nations that tend to have higher numbers of trafficking victims. I believe that the latest figures that I saw were from Asian countries and then also from African countries.
Yeah.
But for in the United States, it's largely Mexico, Central America, that are the greatest numbers of people that are represented in the trafficked victim population.
And who in America, who really is meant to be overseeing this and watching this and controlling it or doing something about it?
My understanding is that right now there are great efforts to coordinate this at the federal level. The FBI certainly has a great task of looking into and investigating a human trafficking incident. They cannot do it alone, so they rely on local state-level agencies. And so right now at state level, there seems to be a coordination through the National Human Trafficking Center on sharing information, because many of these victims are trafficked across state lines and making it federal offenses. And without the coordination between states and some federal coordination, many of these networks would be very difficult to identify and to stop. So many state legislatures are enacting legislation that provides code that criminalizes human trafficking as an act and as a crime in and of itself, differentiating it from all of the other illegal activity that goes along with human trafficking. So for the longest time, people had a difficult time understanding the difference between a person that's being trafficked for the purposes of sexual exploitation and differentiating that from prostitution. In South Carolina, we are very fortunate that we have been able to make that differentiation, and so our current laws do have a specific code that signals human trafficking. So there's that differentiation. So across the country, we have networks of different laws, and there is greater and greater coordination as the country and the general public move to understanding the nature of human trafficking and the need to be very vigilant. Greater reporting systems, and as we move into greater reporting systems, we start collecting greater amounts of evidence and having greater success with prosecution. And we hope that with the participation of everyone and really raising the awareness of this horrible trend, that we can put a stop to it.
Right. And, well, this leads me to you, Laura. What brought you to this? It's very difficult work and not very thankful task. Where did that come from?
Well, I did not start out working on human trafficking, and I am just now beginning to understand it, and like everybody else in the country, and advocates that are working on this issue are just now beginning to become aware of the severity of the issue. But I started getting involved in this because I work with immigrant communities and I'm working on advocating for immigrant rights, doing a lot of outreach work with immigrant communities and trying to find out what are their needs, what is going on, and how we can best help them to protect their rights and also to create safer communities for their children. And one of the primary complaints that we would get, and everywhere I went across the state, people would talk about human trafficking. They would talk about things like the young women in their communities working in local hotels, reputable hotels. These are not by the side of the road, little motel and fly-by-night type of establishments.
Yeah.
But these were very big, normal chains that you and I would recognize readily. And women that work there, cleaning, doing housekeeping types of jobs, would report tremendous degrees of exploitation, being raped every day, their bosses or supervisors setting them up with clients that would come to the hotel, guests of the hotel. And these women were required to go and have perform sexual services for these hotel guests. So we started looking more and more into this activity, and the more that we would find, it would be very obvious that these women had left their countries of origin with the idea that they were traveling with someone that was going to help them cross the border, a coyote, as it's termed in Mexico. And somehow they never reached their destination, their place of destination. So somewhere in the on the journey, they would disappear. I also met many victims as I was working as a medical interpreter at local hospitals. And many of these young women, when the physicians would leave the room, would tell me that someone had brought them to the United States. They trafficked them. They managed to get away. And then they end up with somebody else who takes up the place of the other person. And one young woman was rescued, if you can use that term, from her trafficker, and then turned around and was pimping her out. So they tend to be objectified to the greatest degree. And they, over time, these young women stop thinking about themselves as somebody that can do something better. So they end up just thinking, this is what I need to do to survive. So we know a lot about other incidents where people are deprived of their liberty and freedoms, and those psychological dynamics that happen between their captors and the victims. So a lot of that I have seen. But it has never really been a focus of my work, but in recent months, I have become more and more aware as the state is moving toward coordinating outreach into the communities and helping communities learn about human trafficking and learn about the opportunities and the ability that a community has to identify it, to report it, and to help prosecute these crimes.
Right. So, I mean, what you're describing is almost like the Stockholm syndrome, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what I'm referring to.
Yeah. It it gets them on every side, doesn't it? Really, being handed over time and time again. That's just awful.
And we need to do a lot of community education along those lines, because people within their own community, when they see women that are in this dynamic, in the Stockholm syndrome, they don't know that that is what is happening, and they don't understand that this is part of what happens to these captive women. So their interpretation is that they are willing participants, so they are not victims. They go and they like it and they do this, and so there's a re-victimization by the community because we have not reached out into the community and educating them about what is happening. We've done a really good job working with law enforcement and with legislators, and now we need to go deeper into the community so that these women have a chance of getting out. And it's not just women, by the way. Men, children are also victims of trafficking, and while the greatest percentage, I think it's 85% of trafficking, is for sex services. A great deal of trafficking is done for labor, slavery, people that are forced to labor, to work for no pay, and then children are also trafficked for the child pornography industry.
Yeah, just awful. Mm-hmm. Now, that reminded me what you were saying about the hotels and the setups there. That sounds familiarly like what happened with that French diplomat and the, I think, a Sudanese maid a couple of years back. Was a big scandal, wasn't it? So that, yeah, it sounds like it, you know, it is a common thing, and it does pop up every now and then.
Yes, and the FBI has a really nice campaign. The slogan for the campaign was "Look Beyond the Surface," because these women, sometimes they are people that we know, and we don't even know that they are being held captive. Many of them are working in somebody's home as domestic workers or nannies, living in a home, and nobody would ever suspect that those people would deprive someone and keep them enslaved. And so people really need to learn to identify what are the signs of human trafficking, what kinds of things to look for. And if something looks a little suspicious, it would probably be best to notify, call the tip line, and let the authorities look into it and investigate. And if it's better to look into it and find out that there is nothing going on than to leave a potential victim without a way out if you have the power to do it. Now, we're not advocating that you just go, everything that looks suspicious, you're just going to be calling and calling and having all these false tips.
Right.
But we need to do a lot of education for folks to help men, women, and children to get out of slavery.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Somebody's got to start it somewhere.
Yes, and it begins with us.
Yeah.
In terms of, there's one other thing that we can do that is actually impacting the ability of law enforcement to identify human traffickers, and that is because we have such a large undocumented immigrant population, at least in the United States, that is providing these traffickers with a very powerful tool, and that is the fear of deportation or the fear of something happening to their families back home. And if we had comprehensive immigration reform in this country, it would provide at least the removal of one very powerful tool from the trafficker. Because that's one of the reasons why some of these people don't say anything. They're just too afraid, or they don't want to be deported, or their family back home is under threat. Now, I am not by any means suggesting that comprehensive immigration reform would get rid of human trafficking, but it would remove a very large, large part of the cloak that keeps these traffickers operating without much consequence for the most part.
It sounds like it, yes. And now I'm speaking with Laura Cahew of the South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center. Could you tell us a little bit about your center and the work it does?
Yes, South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center is a nonprofit organization, nonpartisan, and we work on policy issues. We work on issues that affect vulnerable, impoverished, and marginalized communities in South Carolina. So the issues that we are working on right now are, of course, immigration, immigration issues. We also work on education issues in the state, making sure that marginalized communities, vulnerable communities in the state have access to meaningful and adequate education, that everybody has access to the same quality of education so that everyone has equal educational and economic opportunity. We're also working on advancing access to meaningful health care for the most marginalized and most impoverished people in South Carolina.
And did South Carolina take the federal health care, or did it reject it?
We do have ACA, mm-hmm. but we do not have the expansion of Medicaid, and we are working very hard in trying to convince our legislators and our governor to accept the expansion of Medicaid, because we need it. Currently in South Carolina, there would be approximately over somewhere around 200,000 people that will not qualify for health care coverage in the exchanges. And without Medicaid expansion, they don't have any cover, any health coverage. And so their only recourse is to go to the free clinics. And that cannot be our health care system in South Carolina. We have great chronic health illness needs. We have a lot of health needs in our state, and we need to expand Medicaid.
Exactly. It's the vulnerable again getting hurt.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you yourself have developed a community education model, haven't you, to work with the community. Can you explain how that works and how you've worked on that?
Yes. So, as I said earlier, I started working on immigration issues, doing a lot of education on immigration rights, particularly because the state of South Carolina passed a law that is the copycat law of the Arizona, and our law is nicknamed SB 20. South Carolina Appleseed, along with many other partners like the ACLU and the Southern Poverty Law Center and many others, sued the state of South Carolina over SB 20. We received a partial or temporary blockage of three measures that were most like the measures in the Arizona law that were going through the federal court and heading to the Supreme Court. So until the Supreme Court heard the case of Arizona, our law was temporarily blocked, three of the measures. And after the Supreme Court issued its decision in Arizona, we went back to court, and two of those measures were permanently blocked, but one of the measures, the Show Me Your Papers law, like the Arizona law, went into effect. So we currently have a Show Me Your Papers measure of our SB 20 immigration law. We also have our very own immigration law enforcement unit.
Wow.
And right now it's not clear what it is that they are doing or how they are operating, but our case is still in process, so the only thing that I can tell you at the moment is that we have an immigration law in the state, we have an immigration unit in the state, and we have a law, Show Me Your Papers law in the state. So starting to work on that, we very quickly realized that as communities were telling us about different issues that were emerging in their community, most of them related to immigration fraud, and many of those issues were also related to the fact that without a driver's license, which they're not allowed to have in South Carolina, they would run into a lot of other issues. And the passing of SB 20 was also creating many more difficulties for the community. And, of course, that was the whole purpose of the law. And as they would identify particular problems and issues, I would work with the people that called about the issue and helping them identify the solution, showing them how to find direct resources on the Internet and library, visiting the appropriate officials at city government or whatever authority was necessary that could help make those changes that they needed. And once they solved their own personal problem, then we developed a presentation to the community where they and myself would present that very same information and teach others how they solve their problem in case they ever came up with the same issue, they would now know how to do it. And that has been very useful. We started in the first year, 2 years ago, we did a lot of door-to-door outreach work and home presentations. The second year, we moved toward making larger community presentations. numerous presentations and a lot of self-advocacy training. And this year, we are taking those leaders that we identified through the previous 2 years' work and working with DACA students. Those are DREAMers students, young students that have received a two-year deferred action on deportation. And we are giving them more solid, intense policy advocacy training and leadership training. And we are focusing more on immigrant integration programs, so preparing them for immigration reform whenever it comes. So we want them to be ready when immigration reform comes around, and they can very quickly help others in their community go from permanent residency into citizenship, registering them to vote. As I mentioned, we are not a part. We are a nonpartisan group, so we do not tell anybody how to vote or which party or which politician to vote for. We simply work on advocating their civic engagement and full participation in democracy.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be our year, our work to come. Those workshops that we did last year and having them teach others how they solved a particular problem has actually taken on a life of their own. So people in these groups are now providing workshops of their own to other people in the community. And it's a beautiful thing to see.
Oh, it's given me shivers thinking about that. That's wonderful work. Thank you. It's got to be that way, hasn't it? It can't come from the top down.
Exactly. If you don't give people the opportunity to solve a problem on their own, then we are just creating a lot of dependency, and that will never lead to full participation in democracy.
Exactly. It's, again, it's being keeping in the victim mode, isn't it?
Yes, it's just a different master.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And well, we're speaking to Laura Cahew of the South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center about, human trafficking and all that comes with it. And really, it's interesting, as we speak, I was just saying before we came on the air, Indian woman diplomat in back east who was arrested because she was paying her home help $3 an hour instead of the $9.50 or something that she was meant to, and falsified papers. This has become a major scandal here and in India for different reasons, it appears. And and again, it appears that the victim is being victimized again, it appears. Can you explain how that system works, how people become workers to sort of richer people, obviously, and then they really are a slave?
Yes, I am not very familiar with how the socioeconomic and social system works in India, but I would venture to guess that it is very similar with the way it works in some other countries. So I will speak to Mexico's case, for example. In Mexico, until not long ago, many rural communities, and in particular communities of indigenous backgrounds, indigenous communities, many families there would send their young daughters to the larger metropolitan centers to work as domestic workers in homes of more affluent people in society.
Okay.
And oftentimes, because of the inherent classist and racist ideology that most developed and developing countries have lived with as a legacy of colonial systems, these young people, these young women, would oftentimes be seen as lesser beings and not deserving of valuable pay for the work that they did. So the value or the devaluing of the labor that they provided served as a justification or legitimization for the exploitation of this vast, large group of workers in the Mexican economy. Until recently, when human rights violations started to be reported, and the whole narrative and the conceptualization and awareness of human rights started to take hold in Mexico, these women had very little legal recourse or protections under labor law in Mexico. And this has been true of many other nations. So I suspect that in some degree, there are certain sectors in certain developing country nations or developing nations that have not yet embraced the concept of human rights and the concept of everybody's labor having some value. So being able to pay someone regardless of where they come from, what their background is or what their educational level is, and valuing that work and paying them accordingly is a concept that is slow in coming. And unfortunately, I think it takes cases like this case and many others like the ones that you mentioned in order to raise awareness of how wrong this is. And until legislators put in place laws that are going to protect these workers, and law enforcement agencies and society, law enforcement agencies are willing to enforce those laws, and society is willing to not tolerate such practices, this will be very slow in changing. But I'm very hopeful that around the world, we are looking into human rights violations, and more people are learning about their own voice, and they are speaking up, and they are denouncing some of these violations. And so I think that part of why we think there is more of this going on may be also an artifact of more reporting going on. So that those statistics also need to be sorted out. Is it more reporting or is it more incidents that are happening?
I mean, the economic dislocation we've had the last 5 or 6 years, obviously it does seem to point to an economic cause, in my book anyway.
Yes, and you know, very interesting, with all this movement of populations around the world, like people cross a border with or without a visa. And it's very interesting that most people seem to think that if you behave in a certain manner in your own home country, now you're in another country, all of a sudden you're going to leave all those practices and all those attitudes and beliefs and any prejudices that you might have. They're going to be left behind right before you cross the border. And we know, of course, that that is not true. So some of that ideology also crosses the border, and people run into trouble when they realize that on the other side of the border, the laws are different, social tolerance are at different levels, and there are certain social dynamics that they need to conform to. So immigrants at every level of the socioeconomic status or scale, at any range of educational level, sometimes are in shock. And I think that's what that happens with diplomats as well.
Yeah. So what can just regular people do? I mean, what should they look for? How should they report it? You know, what who can they go to support this?
Well, I think that the first thing that they can do is learn a little bit more about the subject so that they can avoid falling into myths. And they base their decisions and their knowledge on factual, evidence-based information. And they can look to the Polaris Project, P-O-L-A-R-I-S, Polaris Project. Project. Okay. And the Polaris Project is an organization that is coordinating the fight against human trafficking. And they have the information for the National Human Trafficking Hotline. The National Human Trafficking Hotline is 1-888-373-7888.
that.
And they can call and give a tip if they think that somebody is in danger, if they think someone is being held captive or is trafficked, either for sex services or labor, or if it's a child that might be the victim of trafficking. They can call that line and give the information, and the investigators will take it from there.
Is that like an anonymous tip line?
Yeah, they can make an anonymous tip line. They can also text their information. So they can text the words info, I-N-F-O, or help, H-E-L-P,
okay,
to be free. The number, the numbers would spell out the phrase be free.
Oh, okay.
And the number to text is
233-733-733. Great.
So visit the Polaris Project website. There are a lot of resources there, different ways of getting involved locally if there are no local campaigns in your community. The website walks you through on how to set up a campaign in your community, how to get people to come and talk to your community education event. It also gives you some very good information on what to look for. As I mentioned earlier, look beyond the surface.
Right.
Those are the things that we all need to learn to pay attention to. In this day and age, when everybody is hooked into a Facebook or a cell phone and we're all walking around with iPods and earplugs, we tend not to see each other. And when we don't see each other, we don't see that someone is in grave danger. And if we should ever fall under those circumstances, no one is going to see us in the danger that we are in. And one final note to make is that human trafficking victims are not just immigrants. Mm. There are a lot of U.S. citizens that are being taken captive in this traffic for sex services, for free labor, and for the child child exploitation.
Wow.
So it's not just an immigrant problem, although immigrants tend to fall prey to this practice in greater numbers because of their vulnerability that comes from not having legal papers and the fear of deportation.
Right. Whew, incredible. How can people get hold of you and your work, your organization's work?
In South Carolina, they can call 1-803-779-1113. Extension 102.
Okay.
And I'll be happy to direct them to the people in the state that have local campaigns.
Wow. Well, thank you, Laura. Incredible work. It's so needed, and as you say, it's the dirty secret there, and we need to expose it, and you are doing that and helping people. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity, and may everybody have a very happy holiday, and remember, as you're going along, during the holiday season, a lot of these women are being put to work in very, very heavy schedules. So as you're about celebrating the new year, keep an eye out for some of these people.
A very good point. Thank you so much, Laura. Laura Cahew of the South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center, and have a great holiday season yourself.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to everybody.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Laura.
Bye-bye.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, and the dreams that you heard of once in a love.